is reconvened. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Okay, I will call our last case for today, Milwaukee Council 48 versus Milwaukee County. Are you prepared to proceed? Please do. You might want to adjust the microphone before you begin. We've had trouble with it this morning. It was hard to hear both ways. So.
How is this right now, Your Honor?
It's okay, huh? All right.
May it please the court, my name is Alan Levy. I'm here from Milwaukee County. We are the defendant appellant petitioner in this case.
I'm sorry. The microphone might be fine for you, but I can't hear you.
I'm sorry.
So
pull it up a bit if you can.
I think you should drop the microphone a bit and then speak into it. We'll give it a try.
Okay. Again, my name's Alan Levy. I'm here for Milwaukee County, which is the defendant appellant petitioner in this case. Plaintiff respondent is District Council 48 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And they sought initially declaratory judgment in this action. At this point, we're on an appeal from motions for summary judgment in which the Circuit Court of Milwaukee County and the Court of Appeals decided in favor of the plaintiff respondent. We wish to point out that District Council 48 did not file a brief at this level. They are relying on their briefs on the Court of Appeals. Standard of review in this matter is de novo. It's purely a question of law, the interpretation of ordinances and contracts and statutes. And we seek reversal of the decisions below and dismissal of the union's action. The basic issue here is whether the county's ordinance applying a pension benefit rule, which District Council 48 bargained with the county 2.5 decades ago, was still in effect after passage of Act 10 and the expiration of the union's most recent collective bargaining agreement, but before the union's bargaining rights were ended by its decertification a year later, or in the following year, I should say. The county contends that its September 29, 2011 ordinance properly identified the union's bargaining unit as, and I quote from the ordinance, employed and covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement at that time, on that date in September. The county submits that the lower courts erred when they substituted the scope of future bargaining for the mandate of the party's status quo bargaining relationship before that certification took effect.
Counsel, how was it that the that those employees could be covered by a collective bargaining agreement that had expired?
Number one, Act 10 says that the parties must continue their relationship after the expiration of the contract.
Their contractual relationship?
Yes, to the extent that they must bargain at least about base wages. Number two, the contract, by longstanding state and federal law, continues its mandatory subjects of bargaining in effect during that hiatus between the end of the old contract and whatever happens to either have a new contract or the end of the union's bargaining rights.
Is that true even after passage of Act 10?
Nothing in Act 10 says anything to change that.
If all of the terms of the CBA continued to apply, did the municipality violate the CBA by reducing the pension multiplier?
No, because future bargaining was limited to wages. And therefore, there was no restriction on what it did on anything else.
So if they're, so is your position then that these employees were continuing, they were continuing to be subject to the CBA because there was an obligation to negotiate in good faith over wages?
That's the beginning of our position, yes, Your Honor. That the status quo on mandatory subjects of bargaining has to remain in effect until either there's a new contract or, in this case, the union gives up its bargaining rights either by decertification.
But retirement benefits weren't.
I'm sorry.
Retirement benefits were not a subject of mandatory bargaining after Act 10, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
But the language of the ordinance was, were they still employed under the terms, plural, of a collective bargaining agreement? Well, at least one term survived. And as a matter of fact, other terms survived in other ways. Because what happened was, as Act 10 was taking effect, and in that, for lack of a better word, confusion of what Act 10 meant, how it was going to be applied, whether it was constitutional, a great deal of litigation about that in that period between taking effect in June and September 29th of the same year when this ordinance was passed. In that period, the county adopted as ordinances a number of terms of the old collective bargaining agreement and said they wanted to keep the status quo because it's, you know, the county had thousands and thousands of employees and they couldn't just take that oil tanker and turn it on a dime. It would have to be a period of time for them to adjust to Act 10. They said in that period they were going to maintain some, not all, but some of the terms of the contract. They did that by ordinance three different times.
What? Tell me where that is in the ordinance.
I'm sorry?
Tell me which ordinance about which you speak. I assume it's 201.24, right? And then tell me what section you're talking about.
I'm talking about the county's page 058 of our appendix.
Okay, well, I have Milwaukee County Ordinance 201.24, and then I have Section 4.1.
Right. And
is that what you're talking about?
And Part 2 of that is the Rule of 75, which is what we're talking about.
All right. Okay.
And Part B of that Part 2 says, a member, that's any employee who's enrolled in the employee retirement system, who, on September 29, 2011, is employed and is covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And there are different rules thereafter depending on different unions.
My concern in this case is I don't know why, at the point when this was passed, they are covered by the terms. I mean, we all agree, I think, that the CBA expired in 2009.
Yes.
Okay. And I don't think there's an objection from opposing counsel that the wages stay until they negotiate something else on wages.
But I
don't know how everything stays.
I'm not suggesting everything stays.
Okay.
I'm saying at least the wage term stayed under the rules of bargaining in good faith.
Yeah.
Because that rule requires maintaining the status quo during this period we're discussing.
But is it the status quo for everything that was in the CBA or just wages?
The language of the traditional cases about it say you maintain the status quo for mandatory subjects of bargaining. At this point, there was only one mandatory subject of bargaining.
Okay.
And that was the wage subject.
Okay.
Now, there are variations on it in terms of there could have been different combinations of how the wages ended up in the bargaining.
Right.
The point is that even after the expiration of the contract, the union kept bargaining. Into October of the year the contract expired at the end of 2009. It was extended by mutual agreement into March. Thereafter, they continued to bargain until, in October, a tentative agreement was presented to the county board. The county board declined to accept that tentative agreement.
And that was October of when, Mr. Levy?
I'm sorry?
That was October of what year?
of 2010, I believe.
So after that, they weren't continuing to bargain, correct?
They were still required to continue bargaining.
But they weren't, and didn't Act 10 make them unable to bargain as to all terms except for base wages?
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't think that's what this case is really about, if I may. The question is, how do you identify the people in a particular group who are going to get a particular benefit? And you identify them, in this case, the way you have ever since 1993, which is the people under the contract in the group represented by DC 48.
But that's not the language that the county elected to use in the ordinance, right? I mean, we wouldn't be here if the county had used the language represented by the union or something along those lines instead of covered by a CBA.
That is correct. I was not involved in drafting it. I can't say anything except that's what we're here today. But the point is that all the way through, all the changes in this benefit, for this union and for every other union, this was how they would identify people.
So you're equating represented by the union with covered by the CBA. You're saying those two things mean the exact same thing.
I'm saying that for these purposes it does, because they're saying, are you working under the terms of a collective bargaining agreement? One of those terms was the wages that were continuing. Other aspects of the agreement continued. Within a month of Act 10 being effective, a number of provisions were adopted as ordinances to continue those terms.
Right, but they didn't have to do that. That was unilaterally. They determined to do that, but that was not required,
that's
correct?
Right. Okay. But that meant, who are we talking about? Those people over there under those terms. We weren't talking about deputy sheriffs. We weren't talking about firefighters. We weren't talking about building tradesmen. They all had their own different arrangements. We were talking about the people who were under these terms, DC 48's terms. We were not talking about the people who were non-union, who had a whole different scheme for how they got their benefit. We were talking about those people. There's a difference between having to bargain the contract about pension and using the contract to the extent it still exists as a reference point for identifying a group of employees.
Counsel, is the phrase covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement a term of art within the employment law field?
I think it had become a term that the county and the union were using for 25 years in terms of those are our people that are going to get this deal. Whether it elevates to a term of art, I can't say.
Okay. So where else would we be able to find that phrase being used to identify a group of people who had a CBA but had expired? That is to say, where would we look in law and custom and usage to find the phrase being used that way, simply as a way of identifying a group of people as opposed to identifying a CBA that was actually in effect?
To begin with, the balance of the ordinance section we just mentioned, paragraphs C and thereafter, discuss other unions using the same kind of language.
Were the CBAs with those other unions then in effect, or had they expired?
They were all pretty much in the same boat. A couple of them had a few months left. Some of them had already expired. All of them got treated the same way. And beginning on page 022 of our appendix, there's a series of explanations from the union as to different groups getting benefits. You'll notice that, for example, there's a difference between an earlier 1991 version that said, in accordance with the provisions of collective bargaining agreements, deputy sheriffs are eligible for a normal pension, and it goes on. Different from the language in this ordinance about covered by the terms. And thereafter, earlier in that same exhibit, you'll see a number of different unions, for example, on page 020, who are mentioned in terms of the nurses. covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement. That's the way they always talked about these groups.
Except in 9, they are on the same page that you just cited us to. In A, it talks about the represented by collective bargaining units. That's different than saying...
That's right.
The phrase that is used here, which is covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement. They could have said represented by collective bargaining units in this ordinance, right?
The language in A goes back to 1993 as well, because what happened was at the beginning of 1993, the county created this benefit for people who had no union representation, the people they called the non-reps, the non-union category of employees. And they always had their own variation of this benefit. And then as different unions negotiated different arrangements, this one at the end of that year with DC 48, they would put in a different arrangement. They didn't have an ordinance about this until, I believe, 2005. That's when they started using this language. But that language stayed in the ordinance thereafter, right up until what we're arguing about.
Council, is there anything beyond the this ordinance that uses that phrase, not covered by a CBA, to identify a group as opposed to identifying an enforce contract?
There are references to this in some of the sick pay provisions and references to this in some of the early retirement provisions.
In what document?
In the ordinances. I'm afraid I can't give you a citation, but I'll be glad to supply it afterward.
This ordinance or other ordinances?
Or not in this pension ordinance, but in other benefits. Typically what would happen is, as a union negotiated a new contract, and this went for all the unions, at least in the last 15 or 20 years, they would then make the contract into an ordinance. So it was kind of a double check. The same words were in both. And they were saying, it's not just the contract that gives you these rights, we're giving you an ordinance that gives you these rights.
Does this phrase covered by a CBA mean the same thing before Act 10 and after?
I believe it does, because I believe all it really does is identify a group of people.
Well, but it doesn't say covered by a CBA.
It says
covered by the terms of a CBA. If you were really talking about it being covered by a CBA, that'd be a CBA still in effect. When the words the terms of are used, how do you think that affects?
I
see that as a distinction that presumably has some import. Otherwise, they would just say covered by a CBA.
I agree, and that's the point I'm trying to make, that if there's any term of the CBA that survives, then they're covered by that CBA. And that term, at least for wages, survives both because of the general rules about bargaining in good faith, which require preservation of the status quo, but in addition, they are preserved by different ordinances adopted in 2011 and thereafter that said, we want to keep this term, and we want to keep that term. In fact, in February 2nd of 2012, two days after the decertification of the union, an ordinance was adopted on the basis of the proposition that nothing would change anybody's benefits in regard to pension. And that was the explanation given along with the draft ordinance.
Council, if expiration of the collective bargaining agreement does not result in the erstwhile members not being covered, what does it take to not be covered by a CBA or the terms of a CBA?
I think covered means different things, if I may. In this case, we're talking about the terms. If it didn't say terms, if it said covered by a CBA, then either they'd have to get a new CBA or they'd have to have a disclaimer by the union saying it no longer wished to represent the employees, or there'd have to be a decertification. And the decertification did not occur until the following January.
Right. So let's slow down on that a little bit so I can keep up. It does say terms of the CBA.
That's in the ordinance.
Yep. So how does one become not covered by the terms of the CBA? Apparently it's not sufficient for the CBA to expire. So what has to happen?
This business started out earlier in the summer because what was happening was, and this explains why we are where we are, what was happening was people who were in the bargaining unit, covered by the terms of the CBA, would take a job like a management position that took them out of the union bargaining unit or go to a different department or whatever it is. They would take a different position that had a different set of rules for this pension benefit. And so the original draft in, I believe it was June or July of 2011, was aimed at handling these people who were no longer going to be under the terms of their original CBA because the job had changed, their position had changed, taking them out from under the terms to go someplace else. And so they were going to have a different set of rules for those people. And then it was...
So the only way you can become uncovered is by going to a different job that was not represented by that union?
Well, go to a different job whose terms were not part of the union's okay. CBA. Yes.
So if you remain in that job, you are forever covered by the CBA, no matter how long it's been expired?
Until either the union was decertified or the union disclaimed.
So why would the decertification have any significance to whether someone is covered by a contract?
Because you can't have a duty to bargain with an exclusive bargaining representative when the union's lost its right to be the bargaining representative.
That's kind of, isn't that a little bit of a bootstrap? So you have a contract because you have a duty to bargain for a contract?
Well, that's been the law since, at the federal level, since about 1960, and at the state level, since about 10 years after that. And that is, in this period, when the union contract has expired, and there isn't a new one yet, and there's still a bargaining duty.
Right.
The union cannot waive that right to bargain. The only way the union can waive that right is to disclaim the group and say we don't want to represent them.
If the county didn't, this might help or might not. If the county didn't have to honor the terms of the CBA during the period of time when you're in the status quo or renegotiating or bargaining time, what do you think the county would have done?
The county would probably have tried to find a way to not change this benefit, because what was happening was there was a window between 1994 and I believe it was 2006 where the union had bargained away its right to this benefit. Others had it, like the people who had no union. And the county adopted this to try and make clear they were going to hold these people to the right, to the commitment that they had made all along since 1993. No change.
So
to take away, but not to add.
So there was one point in time, I made a chart about how all of this goes back and forth, because it changed so many times, and there was one point in time when the union did get Rule of 75 benefits. So from 1994 to 2005, the union ERS members received Rule 75 benefit, and then that was changed after that by bargaining away?
The original agreement, which is the one that's being enforced in this paragraph, sub B, was Rule 75 goes to everybody hired before 1994.
Before what?
1994.
Before 1994. Oh, yeah, I see that.
And if you look, mm-hmm. if you look at the position above that, mm-hmm. It was people whose initial membership began in 2006. So what we're talking about is that period from 94 to 06, where the union had given up the right to claim new employees were going to get this benefit. Older employees, more senior employees, got it and kept it. New employees would not get it. Now, the great irony of this case is, under Act 10, which is supposed to save money for the employer, and limit excesses under the bargaining relationship. What we have is giving these people a deal, those hired between 94 and 06, that they never had bargained for, that they had never agreed to, that they had never gotten. And all of a sudden, they're getting $7 million worth of additional benefits.
But just so I'm clear on the dates, the union members got Rule 75 if they'd been in the ERS before January 1st of 1994.
Correct.
Right? But then that was changed so that once you got beyond 2005, the union members weren't going to get Rule 75 benefits anymore, correct?
They would get it if they, everybody hired before 94.
Right. The older people got it if they still fit. But new people starting
in 94.
Yeah, didn't get it.
Correct.
Okay.
And then the non-union people got a different trigger date for the end of that eligibility, namely 2006 hiring instead of 1994 hiring.
Mm-hmm.
The benefit's the same. It's a question of when you were hired to be qualified to get it.
Where would I find in the record a notation that would show that the union bargained this right away that we're now asking for?
Well,
I mean, I have the stuff you put in the appendix,
yes.
And I made the chart, so I'm just trying to see if it's correct or not.
On page 022 of the petitioner's appendix.
Okay, thank you.
In item A, they talk about bargaining first with the deputy sheriffs, and then they say that in item D, there's bargaining with AFSCME. On the same page.
Is what?
Item D on the same page.
Okay.
Mentions
right.
The bargaining with AFSCME, with DC 48.
Okay. Thank you.
I see my time is gone. Unless there are more questions, I will.
Well, you'll be back for a rebuttal. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Mark Sweet. I represent Milwaukee District Council 48 in this matter. Milwaukee County asked this court to reverse the plain language that the county selected when it adopted Ordinance 1115 on September 29, 2011. Despite the county's attorney coming up here and saying he wasn't present when the ordinance was written, so he doesn't take credit for that, and despite the fact that they point to commission reports and letters from actuaries to request this court to divine the purpose for at least some of the county's legislators, the determinative and plain language of Ordinance 1115 is not complex or ambiguous.
Do you agree that the union bargained away the rights to Rule 75 benefits?
Here's the collective bargaining agreement, the last one that was in effect.
It was just a question, yes or no?
Yes, they bargained
you agree.
Away for
it.
We're giving it the rule of 75 changed. So in 1994 and
they gave it up for something they thought was more beneficial.
They gave up the additional benefits of being eligible for the rule of 75 if you were hired up until 2006.
Okay.
They ended it as of 94 through collective bargaining. So
okay.
As of January 1 of 1994 and continuing through the last collective bargaining agreement, which ended on December 31st, 2008, but was extended until March 31st of 2009, under those agreements, union members represented by my client only received the Rule of 75 benefit if they reached a combined age and years of service prior to January 1 of 1994.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
The point goes back to the fact that those, quote, not covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement on September 29, 2011, received the Rule of 75 benefit if they became a member of ERS prior to January 1 of 2006. One point of reflection from the argument of Mr. Levy, the change really in Ordinance 11-17, which is before you today on September 28, 2011, was the addition of the date on September 29, 2011. If you go back and listen, it's in the record, but if you go back and listen to the committee reports that Mr. Levy relied on to try to have this court reverse the plain language, if you listen to those tapes, the Corporation Council from Milwaukee County made clear that the idea was that they wanted to go back and change not whether you qualify for the benefit on the day you retire, but on September 29 of 2011. So the county chose the words that it did. It said those not covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement on September 29, 2011 received the Rule of 75 benefit if they became a member of ERS prior to January 1. As the Court of Appeals pointed out, this court in Kalal said that we have repeatedly held that statutory interpretation begins with the language of the statute. If the meaning of the statute is plain, we ordinarily stop the inquiry. If this process of analysis yields a plain, clear statutory meaning, then there is no ambiguity, and the statute is applied according to this ascertainment of its meaning. In construing or interpreting a statute,
Counsel, could I just stop you on that just for a second? I think that's helpful. So what do you think the term covered by the terms of a CBA mean in this context? Right. So let me just set it up for you. So 201.24, sub 4.1, sub 2A created one class of employees, and 2B created another. One of the key distinguishing factors was whether or not the employees were covered by a CBA. So when the city adopted that two classes of employees, what do you think they meant by that?
That's the point, is that the legislators chose their word. You're asking me what I meant, but by the question itself, yeah. I would submit that that's inappropriate for the judiciary to be seeking the intent of the legislature. But I'll tell you what I know from...
Yeah, let me just refine it for you then, too, because I'm not interested in their intent. I'm just interested in the meaning.
Okay.
And I want to know what they meant by this. Because if we accept your agreement, it seems to me that whole business about whether the employee is covered or not covered, that just drops out.
I'm sorry, I didn't follow what you were saying, but I'm...
Right. All right. So as of the date of the adoption of this ordinance, the CBA had been expired 2 years.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. And yet, the city made a distinction between employees based on whether or not they were covered by the CBA, one that everybody agrees had been expired. So what is there any meaning that we can give to that distinction?
Yes, I think that from March 31st of 2009 through June 29th of 2011, which was the effective date of Act 10, the terms of the collective bargaining agreement did not continue. That's false as a matter of law. The WERC in the Dodglen case, which is cited in my brief to the Court of Appeals, made clear that it's not the contract that continues, it's the status quo. And the status quo exists not because of the terms of the contract, and it does not continue the terms of the contract. It continues, that's just one reference point, and that's how labor law has worked since 1962 under NLRB versus Katz, and how it worked through MIRA through 2009. So not covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement, again, was part of the county ordinances prior to 2011. Those people not covered by the terms of the collective bargaining agreement were already not getting the rule of 70, were getting an enhanced rule of 75 benefit as of the time that they retired. That section of the ordinance was there before, and it was there after, but it said on September 29. That's the part that changed.
Right.
So the terms of the contract were not in effect. The status quo was not in effect after June 29, 2011. And why did the county write it this way? Well, it appears to me if you look at B, C, D, and E, there's more than just two provisions. Those are the ones we're concentrating on. But what the county, it appears, what they tried to do was to treat everybody the same. And this is consistent with the intent from 1993. Remember, the deputy sheriffs got this benefit back in 1991, collective bargaining. In 1993, the county adopted the ordinance that put it into ordinances for other non-represented employees. The idea was to keep it consistent so everyone would have the same benefit that the union deputy sheriff bargained in 1991. So here, they're treating everyone the same in 11-17. They're saying a member who on September 29, 2011, is employed and is covered by the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, and then they list their seven unions that were represented by unions at Milwaukee County. Three of them had active collective bargaining or did not have active collective bargaining agreements, and four of them did have active collective bargaining agreements through 2011. I would assume what they wanted to do, but because you're asking the question, is they wanted to make sure that everyone was being treated the same. So they're taking a snapshot in time and saying we're not giving benefit to the attorneys union over the general municipal employees union, AFSCME, my client. We're treating everybody the same. So that, to me, is an obvious issue by looking at it. And you can't really accept the county's description, because if you look at the pension ordinance itself, they know how to say covered by a collective bargaining unit or represented by a union. They've said it before right in the ordinance itself. So there's multiple examples, and this is the whole point about legislative history and the debate. I think that Kalal captures it well. I would call it a textualist plus analysis. It allows you to look at, you take the plain language if it's clear like it is here, and if it's not, you look at the statutes that are surrounding it. The provisions in the pension statute itself make clear, for example, that the retirement age is 64 for people that are, they describe it in various ways, but in a collective bargaining unit. Or on July 28th of 2011, it wasn't a prior draft of this, as Mr. Levy said, it was a county ordinance that was passed, and it refers to people represented by AFSCME versus not. So the county knows very well how to say covered by a collective bargaining unit.
Right. So let me see if I can distill this down so I can wrap my head around it. So you are saying that that the provision has meaning because there were other union contracts in place at the time that had not expired. And so that made sense to make a distinction between those covered by a CBA and those who are not. Is that right?
Well, it already had who was not covered by a collective.
I'm sorry?
It already had who was not covered by a collective bargaining unit, by a collective bargaining agreement, by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement. That provision was in subsection A for a long time before what we're talking about. So, they chose the words that they did. I can't tell you what they meant. Mr. Levy didn't venture a guess about what they meant. All I can tell you is by looking at the statute that it's in, I can tell that they didn't mean that it was covered by a collective bargaining unit. And it would have been very easy to have said that, but they did not. And they're asking you to adopt, the Pension Commission study of an actuary who in his own letter says this should not be used by decision makers to make any final decisions. And the Pension Committee report also itself says that there's no additional cost if the issue is whether they're represented or non-represented. So sometime between that commission report and the language that was selected by the county, it appears that perhaps some of you might pick out your friends in the legislative history, as the Exxon U.S. Supreme Court case has said, about the problem with relying on legislative history is that every judge can pick out their friends, but there's a lot of friends here for the union, and there's very few for the county. And if you are going to look at legislative history in a Kalal type fashion, or even in the concurrence of Kalal, I believe you come to the exact same conclusion, because the county knew how to write the ordinance if it wanted to. What they learned is that prior to Act 10, it was very difficult to make a mistake in personnel matters for Milwaukee County because they had to bargain everything with the union. After Act 10, it was pronounced that they would have the tools to make the decisions that they wanted to. Here they picked up a tool that they found was difficult to use, and now they're coming to the court saying, please save us, we didn't mean that.
Counsel, can I interrupt you? I've got a question about the amended ordinance from 2011. It makes reference to in sub B with respect to members employed and covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement with AFSCME District Council 48 or with, and then it lists a couple other unions, Technicians, Engineers, and Architects of Milwaukee County, or with the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Do you know, or does the record reflect, whether or not there was a collective bargaining agreement in force with the latter two unions? As we know, AFSCME's collective bargaining agreement had expired at that point.
Right. So, again, if you look at the entire ordinance, you're picking out subsection B, which covers the machinists, the team union, technicians, and my client. And then it goes on to talk about the nurses in section C, about the attorneys association in section D, and about the building trades in section E. So what I think the answer to your question, I would have to reflect the record, but I know that I believe that those three unions that are listed in subsection B all had contracts that expired.
And I think, I won't speak for him, and I'm sure he'll follow up if I'm misunderstanding the point of Justice Kelly's question. How do we give meaning to these provisions if all the collective bargaining agreements that are referenced in the ordinance were expired? Because then under your argument, none of the employees would be covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement, so the county only really needed to enact sub A. How do we give meaning to these other provisions in B and subsequent subsections?
Well, what you're basically saying is that the county must have made a mistake here, and I think that the, a Justice Scalia approach would be to not look at the at whether the county made a mistake or not, and that goes back in time. I don't know whether the county made a mistake, and Mr. Levy said that he doesn't know if they made a mistake, so he doesn't take credit for writing it. But there was a decision cited back in going way back to Chief Justice John Marshall of the U.S. Supreme Court, who said that that in order to correct a mistake, it has to be so outrageous, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the quote in front of me, but it has to be so outrageous that all of mankind would unanimously agree that it was not what was intended.
But I think what Justice Bradley is trying to ask you is, if covered by the terms of a collective bargain agreement does not identify a group of people, how do you give meaning to the paragraphs in which it's used? It's got some purpose. What's it doing then?
Like I said, there had always been, it's not like they created subsection B.
Okay, I know they did, but what I'm asking you is, if covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement does not mean a group of people, and that's opposing counsel's argument, if it doesn't mean a group of people, then how do you give effect to the statements within that paragraph telling who gets what when?
I mean, it's not like you can't interpret it. We can interpret it. A member who on September 29, 2011 is covered by the terms of the collective bargaining agreement would have to be hired before January 1, 1994. The issue is that on September 29, 2011, because it's one snapshot on one day in history, on that particular day, there was no collective bargaining. They were not covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement.
Well, then the paragraph doesn't apply to anybody, right?
It does apply. It's just that
does it apply to? What group?
It applies to AFSCME members to say that they do not get the rule of 75 as of with a requirement of a 1994 date, because you look back to section A. You can't look at just one provision. You have to give meaning.
I looked at them all, and I agree with arguments in pointing out that C and D and E and F and G, all following B, all have the same language covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement. A is a little different. It says it's not covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement. So what I'm trying to understand is, if that doesn't mean members who had a collective bargaining agreement in place, who does it mean?
Well, again, if you look at the context of the statute, remember that in the past the county was applying it not based on where people were on September 29th, but where they were when they retired.
Sure.
So subsection A covered people who were not covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement when they retired.
Yeah.
And subsections after that, if you look at the July 28, 2011 ordinance that passed, covered all of the unions. It always did. So the issue is not that they meant to eliminate anything to do with AFSCME. They just wanted to make it clear that AFSCME was going to be treated the same as every other union or non-union member. You take a snapshot in time, and on that day, September 29, 2011, the issue is, were you covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement? And perhaps they could have worded it differently, but I would respectfully submit that under Kalal, under the Kalal concurrence, unless you're going to go back to the days of Holy Trinity where, you know, the U.S. Supreme Court said that you can take the intent of a statute and correct it by a judicial body, I don't think that that's where the world is today, and I don't think that's where this court, any member of this court, is today. So I think either you accept what the county wrote in its plain meaning, you can look at the scope, context, and purpose of the law, and for the reasons that I have suggested some of those, you can see that the intent was to give the union the benefit of the Rule of 75 enhancement.
If the words on September 29th, 2011 were removed, would the statute fit in what you believe is the correct, the ordinance fit in what you believe is a correct interpretation?
They were covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement instead of covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement on September 29, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as of September 29, 2011, AFSCME was not covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement, but perhaps someday in the future they will be. That's yet to be seen. So I guess it would be different because maybe in 2021 the law will change and the union will be representing employees again. Maybe they'll certify under Act 10. I don't know the answer to the question.
I'll let somebody else have a shot at it because I'm not understanding your answer because I'm probably not making very good questions.
Yeah, let me just see if I can press it a little bit further. So under sub B, for sub B to be effective, there are a number of conditions that have to be satisfied, correct? Have to be employed as of September 29, 2011. Yeah? Right?
Yeah. Well, it says...
I just want to go through the conditions.
Sure.
Employed on that date, covered by the terms of a CBA on that date, one of the listed unions, and also initial membership prior to January 94, right? And this doesn't apply unless you hit unless you satisfy each of those conditions, correct? Yes?
I'm not sure, but it appears that all those are in there, yes.
Oh, it's conjunctive, right? It says the last condition is preceded by an and. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So so given that, when this ordinance was adopted, was there anyone who checked all the marks in subparagraph B?
In subparagraph B?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know for sure. I guess if it depends how you would interpret the, you know, we've taken it as a granted for granted that it's a member of, if you look at the marked up text, it said the member of AFSCME District Council 48 was the prior version. So we're assuming that when they changed it to a member, we're talking about members of the ERS. That goes back to the initial stipulations in the circuit court.
Mm-hmm.
But there were members of the union on September 29, 2011.
Yes.
So maybe that's what they meant. I don't really know.
Okay. Hang on a second, because you're kind of slipping away from me here. All right? I just want to get your sense of the application of this language to the facts in this case. And what I want to know is, did anybody qualify under paragraph B?
I don't know.
What would you need to know to figure that out?
I would need to talk to the legislators that passed the ordinance and ask them what they intended. But
wait, no. Hang on a second. No. I'm going with your interpretation of the language. Let's say we accept that.
Okay.
All right. Was there anyone who qualified under paragraph B when the ordinance was adopted?
No, I mean, as the union's advocate, we advocated for a position which the Court of Appeals accepted and the Circuit Court, which is that they meant what they said.
Okay, hang on a second.
You have to look at the entirety.
Was that answer preceded by a no? No one qualified under that paragraph.
The union's position, you asked I'm the union's advocate. My position is that subsection A applies to union members who are affected by it.
I just want to get a yes or no here.
I'm sorry.
Can't.
Yes, yes or no, did anyone, under your reading of the language, did anyone qualify under paragraph B when the ordinance was adopted?
Well, you have to look at A and B together, so I would say
I know,
yes.
I know we do, but I want your sense, yes or no, was anyone covered by that paragraph when the ordinance was adopted?
Yes, they were affected by it, but that didn't mean that they had to retire by January. They had to be eligible by 94. It's part of the ordinance, so you have to look at that plus A, C, D, and E.
Okay, So is it your position that someone could still qualify under B, even though all of those CBAs were expired when the ordinance was adopted?
No.
Okay, so no one qualified under B when the ordinance was adopted?
If they fell under A, which my client's employees did, then they would be covered by A. I'm sorry.
Even if no one fell under category B or subsection B, does it matter for your argument? In other words, could the county create these categories, these distinctions, even if no one at the time they drafted the ordinance, no one who fit those categories existed? Could they still do that?
Yeah, they can legislate whatever they'd like, right? Yes.
I want to go back to Justice Rogenczyk's question because I wasn't following, I think, what she was trying to ask and what you were describing. Tell me again, what is the significance of the date of September 29, 2011? There was a version prior to this that did not include that date, and therefore, what significance did that date have to the argument that you're making?
Sure. Well, if you look back at the prior ordinance that was passed on July 28 of 2011, that was attached to the clerk of Milwaukee County's affidavit, which is a part of the record. But back then, they changed the ordinance to tie membership in the union as of July 28, 2011. That's why the word is there, a member of, it used to say a member of AFSCME District Council 48, whose initial membership date is prior to January 1, 94, shall be eligible. That's what they passed July 28 of 2011. That's the first post-Act 10 change that Milwaukee County made to the Rule of 75 benefit. They also made other changes like the pension multiplier, the normal retirement age. All of those made it different, used different words to indicate whether or not you'd be covered or not covered. But the county, if you listen to the pension commission meetings where the attorney from Corporation Counsel came to those meetings with the actuary, his announcement to the committee was that we're adding that date of September 29, 2011 because it used to be that we looked at where you were when you retired, and now we don't care whether you're covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement when you retired or not. We care about what it was on September 29, 2011. So unfortunately for the county, that's not what they wrote in the ordinance. And fortunately for the long-term employees who relied on the ordinances as written, they should have the opportunity to, since they were not covered by the terms of the collective bargaining agreement on September 29, 2011, take advantage of subsection A. I'd point out that Mr. Levy also discussed the fiscal impact that we have of the county's ordinance, and it's really, he threw out a term, and the county did, of $6.8 million would be the actuarially assumed impact on the county employees. That's the value to the employees, but the cost to the county, is less than that. It was a one-time contribution of $618,000, according to the record documents that they put in from their actuary. So it's not at all clear that the fiscal impact of this is negative either, because you're going to be getting a lot of employees are going to be leaving who are higher paid, longer
I don't
term.
Think we're going to decide this case based on the dollar. Okay, I think we're being asked to interpret an ordinance. So
if there's no further questions, I believe that those are the points that I wanted to make to you.
Don't let me scare you away.
Okay.
is there anything about the Court of Appeals decision you don't like? Anything you would change?
I think that the decision of the court applied this court's Kalau decision appropriately. So I think the decision it made was a clear one, and I think it's required by the case law. It's the same decision that the circuit court made. Again, I think that the Kalau, I'll call it textualist plus analysis, is one that people can pick up and understand, and that it doesn't forbid you from looking at the statutes or the related statutes, but it does... it does have a good compromise. So we can look at Act 10. We know what the state asked for. We know what the intent of Act 10 was. We know what the pension ordinances were. This court is very aware of the pension multiplier change. If you look at that language, it doesn't talk about who's covered by the terms of a collective bargaining agreement or the normal retirement age. In the same pension 201.24 ordinance, you've interpreted it yourself, and they just apparently did not say what they intended to say. I think the Court of Appeals decision pointed that out correctly.
I like that last sentence, and if it's correct, mm-hmm. in the Court of Appeals, simply being represented by a union can't magically revive the terms of a CBA which the parties agreed expired 2 years earlier, which is not the subject of continuing negotiations toward a new CBA, and as to which the county is now prohibited from bargaining on anything except a strictly limited base wage. Now, they seem to have put in all the pros and the cons or the...
yeah, the...
into that sentence.
Pardon me? What was that?
I said they seem to have put into that sentence... The terms that make them reach the decision they reached, that is, the Court of Appeals reached.
Yes, I mean, whether or not you could or could not bargain about wages after Act 10 between June 29, 2011 and January 30, 2012 is really not the issue before you. I can tell you that there was no bargaining taking place. It wasn't even close. I mean, there was no discussion on either side. The unions had made it clear that they believed that Act 10 was a complete farce and they weren't going to participate, and the county had made clear that they weren't going to allow the union to bargain about anything at all. And there was no discussions about base wages either, but that's really not the case before you.
So if this court adopted this Court of Appeals decision, you'd be happy? Not only the bottom line, but everything else in it?
Yes, I think that the holding in the Court of Appeals case is completely correct, and I think that what they said about bargaining about base wages after Act 10 was dicta in their case. I know that the WRC has adopted that ruling in a sense, in saying that after Act 10 you had to bargain about base wages, but there certainly is a question there that when you're bargaining only about wages, how can you it be a prohibited practice or an unfair labor practice to change those, since you could just go to the table, say, I'm going to give you a 2% raise, the union says no, and they can implement. So I'm not sure bargaining has changed completely, so uh-huh. It might be, if the court wants to look at that, I don't think that the status quo analysis maintains after Act 10 in any reasonable sense, and NLRB versus Katz doesn't require that, but my light is on, so... Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Counsel, your opposing counsel invoked the Scrivener's error doctrine and Justice Scalia in particular, who said the sine qua non of any Scrivener's error doctrine, it seems to me, is that the meaning genuinely intended but inadequately expressed must be absolutely clear, otherwise we might be rewriting the statute rather than correcting a technical mistake. You didn't make that argument in your brief, but do you think that there is a technical mistake or error in the drafting of this ordinance?
I think without changing any words in the ordinance, you can legitimately make the decision that we've requested. That is to say that the terms of the agreement continued under the status quo rule, at least as to wages, and therefore that pigeonhole of where to put these people is properly applied as the county contends. I don't think you have to go to this elaborate business about who intended what. If you want to talk about who intended what, I'd refer you, if I may, to petitioner's appendix pages 158, 59, 60, and thereafter, which is the legislative history about the adoption of this ordinance. And it would tell you, and I quote, "This amendment limits eligibility for the Rule of 75 for non-represented employees to only those non-represented employees who are eligible for that benefit as of September 29, 2011. This amendment does not change the current pension benefits of any employees." Well, up until that day, everybody was giving pensions based on the language that we're talking about here. All this did was continue that situation as of that day and not say it's going to change thereafter. I would also say that the union under Dodgeland cannot waive, and I quote, cannot waive its right to bargain regarding the loss of status quo items by inaction during a hiatus between contracts or between contract and decertification.
Yeah, but that would apply only to wages. At the point we're talking about here, that would apply only to wages. They had no right to bargain for anything but wages.
That's right. But the ordinance doesn't say pension terms of the collective bargaining agreement. It says terms of a collective bargaining agreement.
Council, please, I'm sorry. Finish.
No. I'm just elaborating.
Are you satisfied?
Yeah, that's fine. I understand his answer. Thank you.
I hear in this answer and in your prior answer that your position is that if any term continued, then they are covered by a CBA, the CBA. Is that correct?
That term of the CBA.
How does, and I heard the specific discussion regarding the base wage, which is the term that continued in your prior responses. But the language of 2A says a member who on September 29th, 2011 is employed and is not covered by the terms, plural.
I think when you go through the collective bargaining agreement, it is more than just a number, because there are rules about wages as to when they take effect, when raises take effect. Different things happen to wages beyond just saying the wage will be X. And we interpret the terms, plural, to apply to all the aspects of the contract that talk about base wages.
Council, if we're going to go down that road, doesn't that require us to determine whether or not the terms of employment are actually controlled by the terms of the collective bargaining agreement? Because by its own terms, of course, the bargaining agreement expired 2 years before the ordinance was adopted. So to the extent that the terms continued, it was by force of law, not by agreement.
That's a very good point. I appreciate that. And I'm indeed saying that the item, the wage scale that's being kept in status quo, is being kept there because it is required by labor law, not by contract, but the thing is called the term of the contract that's being preserved. I think sometimes we slice and dice a little bit too much, and what we're talking about is if there's something about the old contract that persists and must persist by law, then we've got a continuation of that term.
Thank you.
Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for interesting argument. It's hard. It's a real head scratcher, no matter which side you look at. I read one brief and I think, oh, that must be right. And then I read the other one and I think, oh, well, maybe that must be right. And now we've had oral argument. And it's a very good argument and very good briefs. Thank you for all your help. We are going to adjourn now, and the court will meet in closed conference at 5 minutes after 3 o'clock. Thank you.